Welcome back to the ESG Matters podcast. My name is Amat Gomis, and today we have Kim Dabbs. Kim is a global leader in the area of belonging and purpose. As a thought leader, author, and speaker, she is a global vice president of ESG and social innovation at Steelcase. She has a passion for building cultures of belonging and is leveraging that mindset as she partners with organizations leading transformational changes, projects around the world. Thank you for joining the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here today.
So I think maybe we could level set and just for our listeners so that they can understand, can you talk a little bit about your path into ESG in this space and your career path overall?
Yeah, it's always an interesting story. The role that I have right now in the ESG space, I didn't start there. I really started out in the nonprofit sector, working on projects around equity, advocacy, and education. And over time, throughout the U.S., I worked on projects that really started to think and rethink about how our systems work and what opportunities that people had. So really focused on that people side of ESG. And over time, understanding the larger systems that we all lived in and how each sector plays a different role. I transitioned a little under 10 years ago over to the corporate space to first think about how people come together and learn together. So helped build our learning and innovation center here in Munich for Steelcase, and then started working with our clients about building work cultures, and then into our communities, which was like coming home to me and understanding our role and what we did with communities. And finally, over the past couple of years, I've focused my role and my time both on people and planet and the role that business plays within there.
And thank you for that. I think it's also really helpful for people to understand that everyone has a different path into these type of jobs and roles. And it's always interesting to understand how someone gets to where they are. So in your current role as Global VP of ESG and Social Innovation at Steelcase, I'm sure you've had to convince your peers and others in your organization on the value of implementing ESG and social innovation programs and the goals. When you think back, what are some of the ways you've been able to accomplish this successfully, motivate people, and get them interested in and engage in the work that you're doing?
It's a great question. You know, making that shift, going back to that career path, one of the organizations that I used to run was a nonprofit organization called the West Michigan Center for Arts and Technology. And Steelcase was one of the founders of that organization. And I think this is important to know because I actually worked with Steelcase as a partner before I worked for them as an employee. And when I think about convincing your peers and the organization on the value of implementing these programs, Steelcase was already there. You know, we're over 100 years old and we're in multiple locations throughout the world. And part of what drives all of our innovation, all of our progress, is the fact that we've had a longstanding commitment to people and the planet. So when I think about the goals that we've been able to set or the strategies or the progress that we've been able to make, I had, you know, a century of momentum in front of me before I even started working within Steelcase or working on these programs specifically. Now, when you're implementing new goals or refreshing your goals, there's always a movement to build. So I always think of the ways that we've been able to be successful is by designing with people and not for people. That's our employees, it's our community partners, it's all of the things that we do throughout the globe. And each of those have been so embedded in our values that the actions were really easy to get to. So I've been really lucky in my journey here. And I've been even luckier to work with just some brilliant employees and community partners throughout the world who I learn from every day. And the organization is stronger because we're all coming together.
That's really interesting to hear. And it sounds as if, I think some of the takeaways I receive from what you just said is that is really important to understand the culture of the organization. And you've had that because you had worked with them in a different role prior to joining. So you understood the culture and you understood how the organization operates. And then when you're in there, what you're saying is building that coalition, making sure you bring in the right people into those conversations and having that be much more of an organic way to implement change and understand what are the drivers and who can be people that you can maybe not necessarily leverage, but you can bring in and have them as partners in what you're trying to accomplish. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think of all of our changemakers as just catalysts for new ideas and ESG work. As you know, this is forever work. We're all doing what we can in the time that we have and the generation that we're in, but there will always be more work to be done. And working with changemakers and catalysts that are on that journey with you has been just a gift.
Yeah, I think it's so important for people to really get that this is not necessarily something that you'll be able to complete in the next 5 to 10 years. It is an iterative process. It is also one in which there's new material topics that come about. There's new ways to address old problems or problems that we're creating that will need to be addressed. And there's that ability to think about ESG in a way that we're really thinking about how do you solve intangible problems? How do you get a business or any organization to think more critically about their value chain and what they can do to improve? So I think that's really important. Pivoting a bit, we know in ESG, oftentimes the purpose of diversity, equity, inclusion is really to bring in voices that will provide different points of view with the idea or the goal to ultimately make the organization stronger and more resilient. But oftentimes this means that concepts and ideas are no longer the realm of quote-unquote certain people. Can you talk about the evolution and the democratization of ideas in this context?
Yeah, I think the purpose of DEI really isn't just about making organizations stronger. It's ensuring that everyone has equitable access to opportunity. And within an organization, to make that a more humane organization, to make that a more equitable organization, and one where you can build cultures where everyone feels like they can show up as their authentic self, like that is the purpose of DEI, is to honor each other's humanity. And because of that, one of the outputs, and there are many, it does make organizations stronger, and it does make organizations more resilient. But it doesn't mean that everyone has to agree all the time. What it does is it brings different lived experiences to the table, different viewpoints. And to me, at the heart of that, that's why representation matters. Because these cultures that we're trying to build is not where everyone is the same. We're trying to build organizations where we can really have just resilient voices, where everyone's well-being is honored in these moments. And that means representation matters as well. So when you talk about, in quotes, certain people, it's not the democratization of ideas. It's the democratization to have access, to be able to contribute and bring your gift to the table. And when we don't have that, we miss out on so much. We miss out on so much care and concern and well-being, but we also miss out on the ability to challenge each other and where we're coming from. And that's what builds in the resilience.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that oftentimes when people think about diversity, equity, inclusion, it becomes very easily boiled down into just a check the box exercise to say that we have X amount of people within the organization, and they think of it as a way to increase the numbers, but not necessarily to create an environment which people who have different lived experiences can bring a lot of their ideas, beliefs, and provide that contrast, provide that ability to know that if they stick their neck out, they won't get it chopped off, that there is an opportunity for them to sometimes fail, but that they can understand that the organization values that dynamic creation and that they are looked at as an integral part to it. And sometimes I think that companies, when we think about diversity, equity, and inclusion, they fail at that because they're so focused on providing numbers externally, but not thinking internally. How are they creating that succession plan? How are they making sure that people are not being turned away from opportunities or that they're not being silenced by being in the organization in one way, shape, or form? So I agree with you that innovation does occur, but I think a lot of companies need to really look at how are they basically becoming a fertile ground for that innovation, becoming a fertile ground for true diversity, equity, inclusion, where people can feel comfortable to speak up in meetings, to provide those conversations that need to happen and those different viewpoints, that you can become a stronger, more resilient organization in a lot of different fronts.
Absolutely.
So thinking about that, you know, apart from your work at Steelchase, you also have an organization called To Belonging. And I was wondering if you could discuss what spurred you on to start the organization.
Yeah, to me, it's more of a movement than an organization. And I think really focusing on that next iteration that we were just talking about, moving from diversity, equity, and inclusion, moving past the numbers and really getting into the culture. And to me, that culture is where everyone feels like they can belong. So I've been on a journey to write a book that's coming out early next year called You Belong Here, The Power of Being Seen, Heard, and Valued on Your Own Terms. And it's really a book that dives into topics of identity and purpose, so we can all really understand how to belong to ourselves and not let others really tell us who we are and where we belong. It's been a beautiful opportunity to get so many people together working in these concepts and in these spaces to build just beautiful cultures for everyone.
And when you think about building those beautiful cultures, do you see certain, I guess, hallmarks or concepts or ideas that are being implemented in places that you've seen really their what they say and their actions align in that regard?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that organizations can do truly is, one, build a culture of belonging by prioritizing learning. And that learning culture can actually ensure both at the leadership level as well as at the organizational level that people not only are practicing at the policy level, but they're practicing at the everyday level, ensuring that the cultures that they're creating are safe spaces for people to show up as they are and safe spaces for people to thrive. Now, all of that being said, there has to be rigor behind some of these concepts, and the organizations that are prioritizing inclusive policies are the ones that are actually ensuring both the cultural lens on the learning side and the action lens on the policy side, the two start to merge. So whether that be inclusive hiring policies or whether that be succession planning like you're talking about, all the way through leadership training and others, that when you set aspirational goals to meet around inclusion, around belonging, and really start to take stock of your culture, where people are at in the journey, and prioritize the needs and conversations, that's when belonging starts to thrive. And because it's a practice and not a destination, my identity is what it is today. And tomorrow, parts of it could shift and change based upon the situation that I'm in, the role that I'm walking into. So understanding all of those nuances as they start to come together really, really make people's stories of belongings tangible. And you move from those transactional models of transformation into ones where you see individual identities thrive. That's at the heart of really building that ecosystem or infrastructure.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I think from my own personal experience, you know, I remember there was a time I went to this learning for senior level sustainability executives. And one of the ways that they talked about how do you implement change is through this informal hierarchy. And one of the things that stood out to me was this idea of relatedness, right? Where are people that you need to convince, compromise with, or do they view you as someone that they can relate to on some level? And, you know, I think about what you said about education. Oftentimes with various identities, there is an overlap, and you may not know it until there's that education about who you are and that the organization values that level of identity and understands that it is a journey. So for instance, before I wasn't a caregiver, now I am. So I can maybe relate to people who are taking care of family members who may be parents, or they may be in that sandwich generation where they're taking care of children and older people in their family. So you can relate to people and you have that ability to share a commonality that you ordinarily wouldn't have thought of. And if that organization didn't really believe in inclusion in a very rich way, those stories and that conversation never would have happened. Henceforth, a lot of the things that, you know, you talked about sort of innovation and resilience as a byproduct of this, in my opinion, would never have happened because I wouldn't have been able to really relate to those people and implement change and have conversations that would pay dividends for both myself professionally, but also for the organization.
That's right.
So one other question I have, when you think about sort of the journey, and you talked about education and creating a framework for people to bring themselves into the work. Have you seen things change over the last 5 to 10 years when you started to now? Do you see more organizations caring about this? And I ask that because we're heading into a time where economic viability of a lot of companies is being not necessarily threatened, but it's under more scrutiny just because we're getting into probably like a global recession if we're not in one already. And I'm seeing a lot of companies that stated that they had sustainability efforts, ESG, diversity, equity, and inclusion, getting rid of some of those teams. So I'm just curious, what are you seeing in this space generally?
Yeah, the more I look around and the more I talk to my peers, people are staying the course. I know that there's a spike of news of people abandoning these programs, but I would say the leading organizations, people that have actually tried hard to close that gap between values and actions, these leading organizations in the ESG space haven't veered from those commitments. It doesn't mean all organizations haven't veered from those commitments, because I see it in various companies throughout the world. But the differentiator, the organizations that are actually going to take a holistic view of impact, not just a short-term view of impact, those are the organizations that are going to come out on the other side stronger, more resilient, and the ones that have committed and collaborative employees. These investments are for the long term. These are long investments when you invest in culture. But if you talk to the next generation or the people entering the workforce, people are making trade-offs. They could make money, more money through salary in one organization, but have their values aligned to people and planet and others. And they're choosing those value aligned organizations. So I would say these short-term trade-offs for long-term impact are not going to be the way forward, nor are they going to be the ones that are lasting through these ambiguous times.
Well, that's a great place to end the podcast. And I want to thank you so much, Kim, for your time. And I want to say again, thank you for being so illuminating on the ideas of belonging, diversity, equity, inclusion, and your own career path.
Thank you so much for the time and for hosting me.
Take care.